If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Hello and welcome to a fresh edition of the Cubs Talk podcast. I'm Layla Rahimi and I will be joined by James Naveau of NBC Chicago. You know him from our digital team. He works on our website, writes countless articles, also part of this Cubs Talk podcast and the Hawks Talk podcast. As we are at the midway point here in March, getting ready for just two more weeks of spring training play before the regular season, and we are in the virtual podcast studio. It is powered by PointsBet.
Let's play two.
Back! Way back! It might be! It could be! It is! Holy cow!
The fly! He scores! Cubs win!
Ball! Game! Over! Cubs win!
Hello and welcome to a fresh edition of the Cubs Talk podcast. The man dancing is James Naveau. He is a writer, producer with NBC Chicago. Also is on the Hawks Talk podcast. He mans our digital coverage. Layla Rahimi here joining you. And we are just over 2 weeks until spring training when we are, or beginning of the regular season when we are recording this, 2 weeks into spring training. And I don't know about you, James, but to me, my attention isn't on the games as much as it is on the World Baseball Classic, because with the play heating up, it's been very entertaining, especially I'd say these last several games that we've seen, probably in the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, kind of once the pool C and D start in the World Baseball Classic, I think a lot more people start to pay attention, just because you have the games occurring in more primetime instances, whereas when they're being played in Taiwan and Tokyo, you're generally having to either wake up late or stay up super late like a degenerate. I mean, you're definitely kind of challenging your sleep schedule, but I've been really enjoying the action. The U.S.-Mexico game the other night was absolutely crazy. The crowds for those games in Arizona have been absolutely phenomenal. I think tonight, I want to say we're recording this on a Tuesday night, the Mexican team plays again, and then the Phoenix Suns are also playing at the same time. So if you're anywhere near downtown Phoenix right now, I apologize in advance. It probably is going to be a horror show around there, but I think it just speaks to the passion and the intensity we've been seeing from the fans. And I think it's been spilling over onto the field a lot. Like, these players are really buying into this whole thing. They are super fired up. You've seen it on every single roster in this tournament. It's been really exciting stuff. And there have been some really cool storylines that have developed through this whole thing.
I can't agree with you more about the crowd too, especially in Arizona. It has been really fun to watch everybody represent and the way they do. That USA-Mexico game was interesting on many levels. It wasn't the ideal outcome for Team USA by any means, but obviously with Javier Assad doing what he did, Cubs fans have to enjoy that. I mean, he had an absolutely outstanding performance where he showed not just improvement, remarkable improvement. Mm-hmm. That was not just rising to the occasion, that was kicking the occasion's butt. So I was pretty excited to see that for sure. And you're right, we've seen some players really step up on a big stage and make it exciting and deliver in ways that for some guys turn into major league contracts after you see what they do against the Dominican Republic, for example. Or yep, you see the Platano power really coming into play for the Dominican Republic, and Team USA is right behind them. I know the odds always said that the Dominican was the favorites and then it was Team USA, but you're starting to see it play out now. And even keeping an eye on players who you might have known from other minor league systems who maybe didn't make it all the way, it's been entertaining for baseball fans for sure.
Yeah, there was a pitcher, I think, on Great Britain who hadn't pitched in affiliated baseball in 12 years and was like taking time off of work to come back and, you know, try to strike out Mike Trout. Like, those are the types of stories in the World Baseball Classic that you just absolutely love to see. And I think that you're absolutely right about some of the surprises we have seen so far in the tournament. I thought that Venezuela, the way that they beat Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic on back-to-back nights, that entire Pool D down there in Miami is just absolutely crazy. You had Puerto Rico responding to that loss by throwing a combined perfect game against Israel. Sorry, Matt Mervis. And Javi Baez had just yet another highlight in that game with that incredible swim move at third base that he's become so famous for. I mean, Nate and I talked last week about how kind of odd it was that Major League Baseball was still using the old rules in this tournament. And so you're kind of having this almost like a time capsule feeling where you're looking at the game the way that it was played previously. And then you can switch to a spring training game and watch it get over in like 2.5 hours. Like, it has happened with regularity so far this spring. So it's awesome to contrast it in that way. But the intensity level in these World Baseball Classic games just cannot be argued. I know that there's always concern about having players playing in a preseason tournament while they're trying to be getting ready for a long, grueling 162 game season. Frankly, even with some of the MLB players, I think that you're seeing that having them ratchet up that intensity right away might end up doing them some good, might get them to lock in at the plate. And then for these minor league guys who are kind of looking to make a statement, and we've seen it from several of the Cubs prospects so far in this tournament, they're able to do so on a massive stage. And it's frankly really cool to see.
It is. And I have to admit, I wasn't as into it when we started just because of that reason, James, the skepticism a little bit. Is this really good for baseball, especially when we made such a big deal last year about how with the work stoppage, people weren't able to access their trainers and how that affected them, even that little bit that they missed, how that really negatively affected teams and players moving forward with the injuries we saw, or at least that's what they told us. Mm-hmm. But then you see the opposite here. You see this intense competition lead to pride, lead to teammates cheering on other teammates. You know, we see Pico Armstrong cheering on Owen Casey, for example, when he hit that monster home run. That's something you're keeping track of. Just the power that some of these guys are hitting the ball with, too, and how that could play out. And it really is, to me, bigger indicator of game performance than what you would see in spring training, because there is this added level of intensity. People care about this like it's a real game and it's real for the World Baseball Classic. So I don't mind that. I think this is something that you're seeing people play with joy, and it's translating onto the field.
So what's been your favorite moment so far of the World Baseball Classic, of the games that you've watched? Is there one kind of indelible image that you have of this thing so far?
Well, I will say Javi's swim move was pretty vintage. And even his defense, I think to his credit, has also been classic Javi defense. Like, that's the guy you know. And for Team Puerto Rico to not just have that level of intensity and urgency, but then to come away with a combined perfect game. And I call it a perfect game because the mercy rule is in place. So therefore, that is all the game they could play. Therefore, it was perfect. So to me, it just means so much. And then also, for example, you see a guy like Javier Assad rise on that stage against one of the best teams in the world. Those are the moments that really stick out to me. Just the excitement after the strikeouts, or the excitement after the ground ball outs. And Assad forced a lot of those, which also gives me a lot of hope for the Cubs pitching staff. But the defense and the pitching just really mattering. I know we've seen a lot of runs being scored, but to me, that's still so appreciated. Or other players just returning to form that you know them to be. Like, there have been guys playing in the big leagues. Mike Trout hits that home run to make it 9-0 last night. And I'm like, yeah, that's Spike Trout. Remember that guy? Like, here he is. He'll show you who he is every time. Or Kyle Schwarber coming through again those are the things that reaffirm what you knew about those players. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's really cool to see that on this stage where there's only a benefit.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the entertainment value that you're providing to fans too is hopefully going to win over some casual observers. And I hope that, you know, people can also take that away from it in addition to seeing the performances from the players that they know. And I think that the hobby move, of course, is just going to be this indelible image. I think my favorite kind of summation of the chaos of this entire tournament and kind of the joy that it brings, and even sometimes like the confusion, was what happened in the game between the Netherlands and Italy the other day, when the announcers basically had no idea who was going to advance because the tiebreaker was like a ratio of runs given up per out achieved. Like, it was a very strangely worded tiebreaker, because you had all five of the teams in Pool A finished with 2-2 records, and so they had to go to this tiebreaker. So you have the announcers kind of like trying to do math live on the air, and it's just this really surreal thing. And then you have the Netherlands load up the bases. They're down 7-1. They load up the bases in the bottom of the sixth inning, and then the Italian pitcher, I believe it was Joe La Sorsa, comes in, gets a pop out, and then gets strikeouts on the next two hitters to end that threat and keep Italy in front and enable them to advance. That dude looked like he had just walked off the mound after potentially clinching like a playoff victory for his team. There was so much like fire and energy in his approach to that whole thing. I felt like that mix of chaos and good play, that's the WBC for me. That was absolutely fantastic.
And don't forget the Nespresso in the dugout. How great is that? But it's, yep, it's just, it is those fun moments combined with intense moments combined with just being able to say you won that moment. Mm-hmm. And to not have anything major, you know, major be the risk, you know, I think it just, it really fosters a great level of competition. So I'm appreciating it, especially, like I said, you know, with these most recent games. And like, yeah, the fans, you know, dressed up as luchadors, or like, mm-hmm, you know, the plantain and the Patano power. Like, it's just fun things you can cheer for. Yeah. So that makes me really happy. Or like the fans in Japan passing around Shohei Ohtani's home run balls so they can all get a picture of it. Just that celebration of culture.
Yep.
Also good things. Really warm fuzzies. That's
you mean when Ohtani almost hit his own face on the billboard in the stadium?
So close.
At the Tokyo Dome.
So close.
That was so great. He only has 8 RBIs in the tournament. I don't think he really cares too much. Do you? It doesn't seem like he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, no, he's just crushing it is all. But it has been really joyful to see all that as well. I know we want to focus in on Javier Assad. It was like a video game cheat code. Yeah. The likelihood of him sitting at 92-93 last season, getting up to 95 on occasion, right? A rare occasion. And then seeing him dial it up to 97 and then 92 on a cutter.
Yep.
Man, I said to myself, Pitch Lab is doing some things.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that came from? That would be one of my first questions to the Cubs pitching staff or Tommy Hodvey. Hey, man, how'd you XX, AB, XY, XY? No, it's up, up, down, down, AB, AB, left, right, start. How did you Konami cheat code Javier Assad?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you have to imagine that there are probably some other elements at play there, whether it's he knows he's competing for a spot in that rotation with Hayden Wesneski, or the fact that he's representing Mexico, you know, in the World Baseball Classic and competing against the reigning champion United States in that appearance the other night. Watching him go out there in those three innings and strike out Pete Alonso twice and just showcase all the stuff that he had been showcasing in his initial starts with the Cubs in Cactus League play, seeing him translate that to a lineup just absolutely chock full of these legit MLB stars. Like, this was not some B squad that he was facing and doing this. He was going up against the Mike Trouts of the world and looking really good and unflappable doing it. And I think that there's been like a certain buzz around the Cubs, like throughout the offseason, just because of the moves they've made and the money that they've kind of shelled out. But having that type of talent in the pipeline and seeing it start to kind of come to the surface. We got a taste of it last season when Hayden Wesneski came up after the trade with the Yankees. Everybody was really fired up to see what he could do, and he didn't disappoint. He had an ERA just over 2, looked really good in his starts with the Cubs, and he's continued that through the start of this season. And then Javier Assad, with all of that swirling around in his mind and with that Mexico jersey on his chest and literally 50,000 fans screaming their heads off at Chase Field, dude just looked like it was another day in the park, just hitting 97 with the fastball, waving it by. But it was absolutely fantastic. What a really fun night, and what a great summation of kind of the arc that he's making. And boy, that fifth starter competition sure is something else.
I'm glad we get to talk about this in a way that is so productive. And what we're really seeing is also the fruits of the Cubs' labor. This isn't a team that we can say isn't doing its best to try to develop pitching talent. We saw it last year really come onto the scene, and we are seeing some real fruitful results already, at least hopefully. And I think this is a positive thing for sure. And I want to also ask you this, James. I think Javier Assad had a little bit of this in him, even starting in his debut. That ended with a win.
Yeah.
I think he likes that big stage a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it certainly looks like it, doesn't it? I mean, I know that he hasn't really been one of kind of like the top tier guys in the team system. It's not like he's, constantly been listed among like, the top, 15, 20 prospects that the team has. But you looked at what he did last season in his first kind of go around with the Cubs, and I don't think he's ever going to be just like the super strikeout guy. Like, he had some moments in the Cubs system, but I think for the most part, what you're going to see is a dude who's going to be willing to pitch you at least a little bit of contact and allow kind of movement to allow that contact to be weaker. And I think you really saw that during the World Baseball Classic. And I thought that the additional velocity that he had gleaned from the pitch lab stuff that he's done with the organization, I think is only going to help him in that regard. It's fascinating to watch the different ways that he and Hayden Wesneski go through a team's lineup. Wesneski is pretty reliant on strikeouts. He's had a good number of them already this spring, just has filthy stuff. Assad is a guy who will challenge you, but he's also going to hit spots really well too. So I think that kind of seeing the different approaches and knowing that the Cubs are kind of encouraging these guys to pitch to their strengths while encouraging them to kind of maybe bolster some of their deficiencies, really good indication that the Cubs farm system and kind of the pitching staff as a whole know what they're doing.
Yeah, Assad had 4 ground ball outs in that outing that he had that we're talking about facing Team USA. You combine that with the 1 hit he allowed to Mike Trout, striking out Pete Alonso twice, and that's a nice body of work. We will take it. And I think that is a good indicator of the mission statement you are seeing the Cubs build. Ground ball outs are going to be a huge currency. That is going to be so valuable when you consider how they've constructed that defense. That is exactly what a pitcher wants to see. And then that infield be right there where you've hit your spot, you've done your job, and then you get the outs concurrently. That's to me, that's a major key and indication of at least something going in the right direction there. You got to sustain it. And like I said, it's not just about Mexico and USA. It's not just about your debut. It's about the random game in May against a team you might not be fired up for when it's cold outside of Wrigley and sunny and you're just waiting for it to be warm. Not that I've been there, but it's about dialing it up when the time is right as well. And if that means the bullpen for him because of Wesneski, I think that's a very good option.
See, I think I was going to actually ask you this. I know we want to cast a slightly wider net just to kind of encompass everything that's been going on with the Cubs so far this spring. We're going to kind of do a little bit of a mid-spring or mid-cactus league, I think would be a more appropriate term. Check in.
I mean,
on the team.
I had us go in 2 weeks to spring training to start the show. I don't know what day it is anymore.
It's a month into spring training, but it's only 2 weeks into cactus league play. So we'll call this the midterm episode, I suppose. But before we kind of cast that net a little bit wider, I do have to ask you, do you have kind of a sense, like a feeling of, if you were David Ross and Carter Hawkins and Jed Hoyer, who's your fifth starter right now?
I know we've talked about this before, and I will start with saying I think, unfortunately, Adrian Sampson probably goes to the bullpen just based on the spring he's had so far. Ooh, and I immediately said Hayden Wesneski. And I still feel that way, but I would start that way and then and give Assad some key innings, right? Give him some high leverage. See how he does. Test that metal a little bit, because there's something to be fostered there.
I think that I like the idea of having Assad in the bullpen. I think that he's shown that he can pitch in some higher leverage situations, especially with that WBC appearance. The only thing that I'm curious about is you do already have two guys who kind of already fit that mold in this bullpen. When you talk about Adbert Alzolay and Keegan Thompson, I think that Assad's ability to stretch out and to be a starter might require the Cubs to have him start the season in AAA. I think that the one thing I will say is that if the Cubs do decide to keep him in the bullpen, I am okay with that. The one thing that I just kind of keep butting up against and not really agreeing with is the idea of potentially, you know, having Wesneski in that bullpen role. I know we've talked about that during the spring. The more you see that guy pitch, the more you think to yourself, this dude is going to be a starter in this league. Like, his stuff just profiles that way to me. And so I think that if that's going to ultimately be the determination that that's going to be the path that he's going to be on, I am totally fine with Wesneski being the fifth starter. I think he's earned it based on his pitching this spring, based on the pedigree, all that stuff. I think that I would be totally fine with the Cubs either leaving Assad in the bullpen or sending him down to Iowa to keep him stretched out, in the ultimate likelihood that you're going to have some injuries in the starting staff, especially early in the season. That kind of stuff creeps up all the time. You already had Justin Steele dealing with a little bit of a dead arm. Cold weather at Wrigley Field always can kind of cause some nagging issues that'll keep a guy out for a couple of weeks. So I think keeping Javier Assad on that starter schedule and keeping him kind of in that rhythm might end up benefiting the Cubs in that April and May stretch. And so I think that that's probably where my head's kind of leaning right now, is to have Wesneski in the rotation and then to have Assad stretched out down in Iowa, continuing to pitch those innings.
You know how I view it. Like, I'm always like, can I have a big spendy bullpen even when I might not need to have a big spendy bullpen as a general manager? And my greed tends to lean that way. You're right. That is a very good solution for Javier Assad. But either way, it's just a nice step in a direction that is really showing some optimism. And that's something that we wanted to delve into a little bit more, is the tenor surrounding the Cubs from fans and how positive it seems, at least to those of us who are a little closer to it in the media. And the question was asked by our producer, Tony Gill, why do you think that is? And I think it's because the Cubs spent money. Mm-hmm. They spent on one of the top four free agent candidates at shortstop. They got Dansby Swanson. They got their guy. They made a commitment. You are seeing pitchers really develop in ways that we haven't seen before. The cultivation of talent, translating that to the big league level, trading for pitchers like Wesneski, for example, and that plan coming to fruition. And then just getting a lot of players and seeing who sticks where. Like, they got a lot of big name free agents, even if they're not at the places they were when you learned their names.
Right.
So seeing how those guys fit in a way that is productive. So I think when you put it all together, it makes sense that there is a controlled optimism. Now, how that shakes out, say, if you're a month into this and it's a team that looks like it's going to finish 500, are you going to be mad about that? And I still say no, because of the direction they're going in and what they're trying to build overall.
Yeah, we'll see who's producing at that point, right? And I think that if the Cubs go into the start of the regular season and Seiya Suzuki is still not in the mix, and you know, I think that's going to probably buy them a little bit of patience from the fans. But I think that ultimately we are going to be looking at how some of those bigger name guys produce, the Dansby Swansons of the world, for example. I know that there's been a lot of, you know, kind of discussion about him, you know, where he ranks among MLB shortstops. It's cool to have a guy on the roster that's in that kind of discussion. I think that's going to end up being a big part of it in terms of how long that optimism could be made to last. Though, as strange as this sounds, one of the reasons that I am optimistic about kind of the way things are going right now, aside from your, you know, good points about the prospects and stuff in this system, is that the Cubs just have not, they haven't seemed to be content to kind of let things lie the way that they are so far in this offseason and now into the spring, right? Like, they made a bunch of moves. They did a lot of really interesting things. They went out and got Eric Hosmer, and Cody Bellinger. They could have rested on their laurels on some of that, those veteran additions, but they still went out and got a Trey Mancini, right? They still went out and got an, exactly where I was going with that. They went out and got an Edwin Rios. And it signals to me that not only are they trying to just have, you know, purely a number of options to kind of choose from, but they're always willing to kind of tinker, and they're wanting to like kind of push the team forward. And I think that at times in the recent past, the Cubs as an organization have kind of been content to just kind of let, you know, things fall where they may, roll the dice and let's see how it works out. They seem to be taking a lot more active of an approach to addressing some of the holes and some of the needs in this roster. And I think that that's only going to benefit them. I think the one area that I'm kind of curious that they didn't try to exploit a little bit more was that veteran lefty reliever market that kind of developed in the spring, right? When your Brad Hands were still not signed to teams, and your Mike Miners and those types of guys, you know, who were, or Matt Moore was who I was looking for. Too many MM names. But I think
Miner's still unsigned.
He is still unsigned. Yep. I was looking for Matt Moore's name and couldn't find it in the old noodle. There's, you know, not a lot up there, but sometimes it gets cluttered. I will say that that's the one market, I think, that if you're going to kind of ask a question of the Cubs and just be like, why didn't you kind of jump some of those veteran lefties when your bullpen is so right-handed heavy? That to me is kind of the one question they've left unanswered. But aside from that quibble slash critique, I think that the activity that they've shown in being willing to fill those holes in their roster is a great reason for optimism on the part of Cubs fans.
I agree. I'm still waiting to see in a real game how it plays out that you don't have Wilson Contreras's bat. Mm-hmm. That to me is still a major question because it was so significant of one. Mm-hmm. But when we look at, say, the MLB projected lineup, and this is assuming Seiya Suzuki is not a part of it on opening day, which I think we're all assuming that that is the case, correct?
At this point, yeah.
I don't see him being available opening day. If that changes, it changes. But this is our prognostication.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
That it's Nico Hoerter leading off, Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ. Then you have Cody Bellinger and Trey Mancini. And to put Bellinger in the heart of the lineup, you're placing a lot of trust that he's going to return to form that you've seen previously. Edwin Rios, Patrick Wisdom as DH, Eric Hosmer, and then Eric Hosmer at third base, Yan Gomes at first, and then catcher?
Edwin Rios would be the DH in this scenario laid out by MLB.com.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense. And then Eric Hosmer. I got my commas confused there.
Are you wondering why Yan Gomes is having to play first base? And,
yes, I was. Tucker Barnhart, I guess, would bring that up.
I had to copy that into the chat, and I apparently the commas are, they look very strange to us.
Splicing.
Yeah.
In so a paragraph. I'm used to a list.
What's the view on the lineup, Layla? Is that the one that you'd roll out on opening day?
I don't know if you put Bellinger and Mancini that high. I guess that means it's theirs to lose. Patrick Wisdom still had 25 home runs last year, and that led every batter in Chicago.
Dead.
Do you put him and Rios up higher?
See, that's, I think with Rios, the thing that you have to remember is, I know a lot of people kind of pointed out his issues with strikeouts when he was with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he didn't really have the power numbers to kind of back that up. I think that so far this spring, he has shown some pop. He has shown some propensity to strike out, too. So I maybe would be a little bit hesitant to putting him in that four spot or that five spot. The Cubs just don't. I'm going to go back into negative territory here, I guess. They don't have like kind of a bona fide fourth batter right now. Like, they don't have a cleanup guy at this point in time. I think that when Seiya Suzuki comes back, maybe you can mess with that a little bit. Maybe drop Ian Happ to four. You could probably have Swanson hit third, maybe have Suzuki bat in second or something like that. I think that that might make a little bit more sense from a lineup construction perspective. But the big knock on this team throughout this entire process, and you articulated it perfectly when you mentioned Wilson Contreras's bat not being in that lineup, they just don't hit for a lot of power, and they don't have a ton of home runs outside of probably Swanson and Happ. I think Bellinger, maybe you hope for a few more home runs from him this season. I think he had 19 or something like that last year. If he can kind of get back to that like 25 home run level, I will feel better about him potentially batting fourth. I think this just illustrates the fact the Cubs need kind of another middle of the lineup bopper, and they don't have it right now. And it's going to be kind of a piecemeal approach. David Ross is probably going to mix guys in a whole bunch in that situation. I'm comfortable with the top three in that lineup. And I think that Yan Gomes is an intriguing candidate to bat ninth to kind of turn this thing over. But man, that like four or five spot, I'm at a loss for how they really address that without making some sort of addition that we don't really think is on the horizon right now. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's just like, I like Nico Hoerner batting leadoff and Swanson at the second position. Makes a ton of sense. Boy, there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered, though.
I mean, that's it to me, is that, for example, say Eric Hosmer has the same type of April he had last season. You're probably moving him up in the lineup then. Mm-hmm. Ian Happ, we saw the majority of the second half of the second half. I want to say the last 25% of the season, we really saw him batting cleanup, didn't we? We saw him mostly batting fourth.
Yeah.
So do they put him back in that spot since they're still down Suzuki? Like, those are the questions I have. Is giving Bellinger more protection in the lineup the answer? Trey Mancini, as we know, offensively, after he got traded, especially, did not have the offensive type of output he wanted.
He's been hitting very well in the spring, though. I do feel compelled to bring up, I think he's still batting like 500 or something like that. Looks like he's seeing the ball really well. So that is a really good sign for the Cubs for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to disrespect him. I just think about the game experience.
Breaking news, Leila Rahimi disrespecting Trey Mancini. It must be last names that end in I. That's clearly what's causing the issues.
Yeah, people are going to complain no matter what, aren't they? And yet they still listen.
It's all about hot takes, yo. That's the whole thing. I think that there are times, I mentioned this to Nate the other day, I feel like it's really easy to kind of focus on the positive with the Cubs just because of the progress they're making in their system and in their pitching. Looking at that lineup in black and white, like, there's definitely some downs they're going to be kind of experienced. This season's going to be kind of an up and down one. And I hope that for all the optimism that's kind of surrounding the Cubs right now, I'm really hoping that fans are, they're going to be ready for a little dose of realism when these games start counting and you start seeing the Cubs playing at Wrigley Field. Like, I'm looking forward to the season, but there are some questions that I'm not sure we're going to like the answers to.
I think you're right about that. Like, you see it and you know that there's potential for outs or something that might buzz kill the rally a little bit. But I also think that you're right. You have reason to be optimistic when you see spring training. I just, The ball flies this time of year in Arizona.
They haven't been hitting a ton of home runs even with that. Their team leader still only has two. So, and I think Luis Torrens had two in one game, and those are the only home runs he's hit. So even
that
with
one
the
was
ball,
to straightaway center. Oh, well, one of them. Yeah, that was crushed.
Oh, he ripped the snot out of that one. You're absolutely right. I'm just saying that, like, the Cubs, their spring training numbers in terms of home runs, like, the Arizona sky is not doing them any favors right now in that regard, but at least you've got some guys hitting for good average, and you do have guys drawing walks too. So those are both, I think, positive developments and are indicative of a team that's going to be able to generate some runs, hopefully, in different ways.
Yes. I just know that the ball flies a lot better right now there than it does here.
Have you gone out and taken any BP lately? I know you had mentioned that you were maybe going to get in the cage at Sluggers or something.
Oh yeah, I have gotten in the cage at Sluggers. It's been almost a year. No, I think less. No, it's actually only been, it was September when I got in the cage at Sluggers. But I've walked outside a lot with the wind pushing me in my face. According to Brand Miller's forecast, though, we do have a lot of 50s in store, so maybe it won't be as bad as I think to start the season.
Now you're just reminding me of the work that I have to do when I'm done horsing around with you talking Cubs.
And I've got to work on our 10 o'clock show. I think that does it for us, James. Thank you for joining us once again for this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast. I call it the spring break edition because it's that time of March, and I have no idea what day it is anymore, what I'm doing, but we appreciate you hanging with us. Hanging with us trying to figure out time frames, and we'll be back next week with a fresh episode.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know, with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.